Good morning, and thank you for being here today. You all set? In 2012, I was called upon by a prosecution journal, the Empire State Prosecutor, to write an article about what to reveal and what not to reveal to the media during the course of a criminal investigation. I wrote the following. When I am asked whether an individual is under investigation, I generally respond that it is office policy to neither confirm nor deny the existence of an investigation. I believe that to acknowledge a target who is under official scrutiny creates at least three problems. First, comment upon an ongoing investigation often compromises it. Second, even if exonerated, the target will carry the taint of accusation forever. It is particularly difficult for a citizen to unring the bell once it has been publicly clanged by the county's chief law enforcement official. Third, if in fact the investigation never develops sufficient evidence to proceed further, a portion of the public, having already concluded the target's guilt, will question why we let a criminal walk. There have been times that I believe that the circumstances required a comment on the existence of investigations. In those rare cases where the allegations directly affect public confidence in the integrity of the criminal justice system, I will offer a limited conduct or comment. Today is such an occasion. It has been long reported that this matter arose from an alleged incident that occurred on August the 2nd of this year. The investigation into those allegations is ongoing, and as I have previously indicated, consistent with my ethical obligations, I will have no comments with regard to that matter. However, 2 days ago, allegations were made regarding the integrity of the criminal justice system here in Erie County, as well as the custody and preservation of physical evidence and forensic evidence. An intense and comprehensive investigation of those allegations is what I am here to address today, while the investigation of the allegations relevant to the events of August 2nd will continue by the Office of the District Attorney and the Hamburg Police Department. The investigation into evidence tampering was conducted by this office and spearheaded by an investigation team whom I will identify in a moment. Before I do so, I wish to thank Mr. Iwano for expressing his confidence in the ability of my office to fairly and professionally conduct this investigation and for his full cooperation in this investigation. The investigation team was spearheaded by Chief Confidential Criminal Investigator Joseph Riga. I think anybody locally is well aware of Investigator Riga's reputation as Chief of the Buffalo Police Department Homicide Squad for many years, as the Chief of the NFTA Police Department, and as the Chief Confidential Criminal Investigator in the Office of the District Attorney. I have publicly stated on more than one occasion, in my 27 years as a prosecutor, I have not met a police officer more professional than Joe Riga. Also on this team were Confidential Criminal Investigator Nicole Jones. Nicole was a story detective with the Buffalo Police Department Sex Offense Squad, and of course, Confidential Criminal Investigator Mike Negrelli, standing right behind me, who before he came to the Office of the District Attorney was a captain in the New York State Police. I also wish to recognize the presence of CPS, Central Police Services Laboratory, and I'll use CPS as the abbreviation, Commissioner John Glasscott, CPS Lab Director John Simich, and of course, Police Chief Greg Wickett from the Hamburg PD. Gentlemen, I trust that after today, the public will rest assured of both the integrity and the professionalism of your agencies. If you'll turn your attention to the television monitors for a moment, please. Certain claims were made 2 days ago by Mr. Iwano, who was the attorney for the complainant in this matter. At that press conference, he stated yesterday, meaning Tuesday, September 22nd, a rape kit evidence bag was delivered to the home of my client's mother, displaying a clear plastic bag containing a brown paper bag. It's right there with evidence gloves on top of it. He stated the following. We know this to be the evidence bag, that once contained the rape kit in evidence. It is authentic. It is the rape kit evidence bag. It's not. Let's talk about some facts. Evidence is usually placed in one of three kinds of containers. Cans, usually done in arson cases, bags, or boxes. A rape kit is a box. This is a rape kit. It is a box. As you can plainly see, it is not a bag, nor does it require a bag. It is a sealed box to start. The materials, the swabs and so forth, are in the box. Once the materials are taken, they are then put back into the box. The same nurse completes the initialing process, gives it to the police agency detectives. The police agency detectives take it to the lab. Rape kits in Erie County are not placed in bags. There may be an occasional time that it is, but generally they are not placed in bags. And they are not submitted in bags. Fact. The rape kit in this case was opened by the sexual assault nurse examiner, they're called SANES, at 9:30 a.m. on the morning of August the 2nd. It was sealed by the SANE at 11:39 a.m. and turned over to the Hamburg Police Department 1 minute later at 11:40 a.m. The rape kit in question, not only in general, but the rape kit in question in this case, was not placed in any kind of bag. The rape kit was delivered to the CPS lab by Hamburg PD at 12:06 p.m. How do we know this to be true? Video. And the box, the rape kit itself. As you will see, it was opened at 9:30. It was sealed at 11:39. It was turned over to the Hamburg PD. The Hamburg PD then promptly took it to the lab and arrived at the evidence locker section of the lab at 12:06 p.m. on the afternoon of August the 2nd. There is the video demonstrating same. You'll see the detectives entering the room with the rape kit with an envelope on top of the rape kit containing the detective's notes. Let's slow that up for you. At 12:06, we see one of the detectives with the rape kit in his hand, evidence envelope, or his note envelope on top. There is the time. There is the rape kit. There is no bag. We see a few minutes later, he's putting his initials on the rape kit for the chain of custody purposes. There is no bag. That's the rape kit he's initialing, the same one I showed you a moment before. At 12:13, he's getting the associated paperwork, rape kit in hand, no bag. At 12:16, the detectives are preparing to place the rape kit, no bag, in the evidence locker at CPS. And at 12:16 and 7 seconds, the bag is placed in the evidence locker at CPS. And the detectives walk out a couple minutes later. Let's continue to talk about facts. The rape kit was never in any kind of bag. The rape kit was properly sealed and properly submitted to the CPS Forensic Laboratory, and it has never left the custody of the CPS Forensic Laboratory since. It's been there the whole time. Two bags were displayed by counsel at the press conference 2 days ago. Not one, two. One was a clear plastic bag marked evidence. The other was a brown paper bag inside the clear plastic bag with a sticker affixed to it. There is the front of the clear plastic bag. Brown bag is visible inside it. It's emblazoned with the word evidence. You'll note that nothing's filled out on it. There is the back of the bag with the seal affixed to the brown paper bag. Facts. As to the clear plastic bag, it did not come from the Hamburg PD. In fact, we traced it down through its serial number and called the manufacturer. It was manufactured in 2011. Anybody could get this kind of bag. And upon interviewing Mr. Iwano, it admitted that that clear plastic bag came from his office. I have blocked out both the name of the complainant and her date of birth for obvious reasons. But they're on there. That's the tag on the brown paper bag. It has the date. It has the hospital, ECMC, Erie County Medical Center, and it has the initials of the same nurse, MMS. We've taken a sworn statement from the same nurse, by the way. She has a recollection of all these events. As to the brown paper bag, the complainant went to her mother's home and changed her top, the top she was wearing on the morning of August the 2nd, before she went to ECMC to be examined by the saint. In other words, she stopped at her mother's house. She stopped at the house first, put on a different top, then went to the hospital. A civilian accompanied the complainant to ECMC while she was undergoing an examination. The saint provided that bag, that brown paper bag, to the civilian. The civilian was asked to place the complainant's top in the bag for later collection by the police. The civilian left with the bag. The civilian is the last known person to have had the brown paper bag that was given to her on the morning of August the 2nd, 2015. The civilian is the complainant's mother. What conclusions can we make from these bodies of facts? Three. One, neither bag, not that plastic bag, not that hospital bag, contained the rape kit. They're not evidence bags. The forensic evidence in this case was not tampered with, nor was it compromised. And the last person seen with the brown paper bag on August the 2nd of 2015 is the same person who purportedly discovered the brown paper bag at noon or thereabouts on September 22nd of 2015. That being the complainant's mother. Questions?
Will there be charges brought against the victim's mother?
It is not a crime in the state of New York to make fraudulent representations to a private person. We will study the law. We will look at the law. But I think it is unlikely, at least at this point, that criminal charges will be brought against the complainant's mother because there is no criminal charge under state law to bring. But as I said, we will review the law and make sure of that.
What was the mother's motive, in your opinion?
You would have to ask the mother.
Frank, you said for the state to make fraudulent claims.
No, I didn't say the state.
There's nothing on the books that makes it a crime to.
Have here is an individual who gets. She denies it, by the way. I don't believe her denials. We have an individual who brought a brown paper bag to an attorney, Tommy Iwano, claiming she found that brown paper bag in her doorstep. That's false, okay? Though that statement was made under oath, that would be perjury, okay? If that was to introduce evidence into an official proceeding, that would be a crime. But what this person did here is she made a false representation, a lie to another private party, an attorney. And generally, and I'm going to scour the law to make sure I'm right about this, but generally that is not considered a crime under New York law.
Frank, do you believe there is any way?
Hold on, whoa. Wait one at a time.
If there is any way to charge her, will you?
I will look at the law, I will look at the facts, and make that determination at this time. But right now, my preliminary assessment under New York law is what she did, although if she did it, clearly immoral, is not illegal under New York law.
How has this development impacted the investigation and your ability to move forward?
It depends. The scope of this investigation was to see whether or not there was evidence tampering. There was not evidence tampering. That's the purpose of this press conference. That was the purpose of this investigation. We believe that a person, the complainant's mother, has engaged in an elaborate hoax. Generally speaking, the sins of the mother and father are not usually transferable to the daughter or the son. However, if the investigation further reveals that the complainant was somehow involved in this, knew about this, then that could be very relevant. But we haven't gotten to that point yet. The focus was to see whether evidence was tampered with. That's where we are right now.
So if you find out that the complainant knew what the mother was doing, how would that affect?
I can't answer hypotheticals like that, Carolyn. I have to see what the facts are first and then proceed upon what the facts are.
Will any sanctions potentially be brought or claims, I don't know the nuance of it, against Iwanu for raising the specter of this, knowing it was a bag and we're talking boxes? Does he have any culpability in this?
Criminal culpability? No. No, I think, although Mr. Iwanu was being reckless, I think he was being sincere. I do not think he was being disingenuous, and that's the best way I can answer it.
Has this delayed your case going forward to possibly present it to a grand
jury? Well, certainly the information that has been uncovered in the last 48 hours is something we have to seriously consider. I think I alluded to that with respect to Mr. Brown's question over here. We have to look into whether the complainant had any part of this.
There are reports out there that one of your key witnesses is now reluctant to testify. Can you say whether your reports in Chicago suggested that?
So report.
Key witnesses, the Chicago Tribune reported that one of your key witnesses, without identifying the person, is now reluctant to talk, which could compromise your ability to go forward.
I have no idea what you're talking about. The best way I can answer that. I can't respond to what's in the Chicago Tribune and what they claim. And I mean, there's been many, many things that have made it into the media which are manifestly untrue.
Frank, why did you provide the DNA results to each side, your office?
I thought it was fair. I thought it was fair to both sides. There were certain things in the DNA results that I felt I had an ethical obligation to provide to counsel for Mr. Kane. And if I'm going to provide that information to counsel for Mr. Kane, in all fairness to the complainant, I wanted to provide that information to her attorneys as well.
Is that typical? Do you normally do that sort of thing?
Without referencing this particular case, there is a case called Brady versus Maryland. Okay, it's called Brady material. When a prosecutor comes across evidence that is favorable to the accused or can possibly exonerate the accused, a prosecutor is under an obligation to turn that evidence over to counsel for the accused. That there is some debate whether when that obligation is triggered. Some would say it is only triggered when a person is charged. I think in certain circumstances it is triggered even before a person is charged. And in the discharge of my ethical obligations, not only as a prosecutor, but as an attorney, I felt it was appropriate to give that information over to counsel.
Has the coverage of this investigation, I'm talking about the rape allegation, has the coverage of this investigation, the leaks, the false allegations about this, hindered your office's ability at all to be able to go forward and determine the truth of this matter?
Sure doesn't help.
Have you spoken to the accuser about what her mother may have done, and if so, can you talk a little bit?
We have not spoken to the complainant yet. I am not permitted to talk to the complainant. The complainant very promptly retained two lawyers, both Mr. Ioano, who is a criminal defense attorney, and Mr. Zircone, who is a civil plaintiff's attorney. Under the rules of professional responsibility, once they say you can't talk to my client without me present, I can't talk to their client without them present. So it is sometimes rather difficult to engage in communications the way we normally would with a complainant.
But how early Ioano said that she's perfectly willing to speak with you folks and testify before the grand jury.
Well, are you asking me a question there, Lou?
I'm pointing it out and seeing if I can get a reaction.
You're not getting one.
Thank you.
Okay. If you have a question, I'll answer it, but I'm not, you know.
How early on did you know this was a red herring, this bag?
Well, I suspected it was a red herring right from the beginning, but knowing what I know about evidence, I mean, I've been a prosecutor 27 years. I mean, we've prosecuted all kinds of sexual assault cases in this office, and when Mr. Ioano started parading the plastic bag and the brown paper bag in front of the cameras for you guys, I mean, everybody in the out there thinks, oh, boy, oh, look, evidence bag says evidence, brown paper bag. No, rape kits are stored in boxes. They're not stored in bags. So when he's saying this is the bag from the rape kit, that was a total disconnect. What are you talking about? Rape kits are in boxes. They're not in bags. So right immediately I'm thinking something's not, maybe he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Is it standard practice to give a civilian a bag of evidence like that to therefore go and do with whatever?
No, because the anticipation was the police were going to quickly arrive at the house and collect it. So I think it's appropriate given the circumstances that the same nurse was confronted with, because she found out that a different garment was being worn by the complainant, and she wanted to make sure that the lab had all the garments to look at if they so chose.
Do you feel that the police should have taken this bag with them when they left?
Well, what happened was the police did show up at the complainant's mother's house. She had the bag there, this particular bag, with the seal affixed to it. It's not an evidence bag. It's a hospital bag, okay? The police, as I understand it, Greg, your detectives saw that this bag was there, said, we don't want to put evidence in that bag. We want to put it in a real police evidence bag. So when they went to the complainant's mother's house shortly after she had received that brown bag from the hospital, they said, we don't need that bag. We have our own bag. And they put the top into their own evidence bag, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Right, but for safety's sake, should not the detectives have taken that bag and taken it as evidence in case there had been some kind of forensic DNA or whatever on it that could be relevant?
I don't understand the premise of your question. Why would there be relevant forensic DNA evidence on a bag that came from the same nurse at a hospital?
Did you not say that there was a top that was put in that bag?
She was instructed to put the top in the bag. Okay.
Was the top never put in the bag?
I don't know. All I know is that the top was put in the Hamburg PD evidence bag.
Right, considering the spectacle,
the DNA results are out there. It's been reported on. There's been a lot said, written about this, a lot of back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
People might be wondering, in this county, given the bizarre twists and turns led us to today, is there anything left to prosecute?
Well, first of all, Rule 3.6 of the Rules of Professional Conduct specifically prohibit me from commenting upon the performance or results of any examination or test. So I'm not allowed to talk to you about that until a future date, until there's some resolution of this matter. And that the ethical code says a couple things I can't comment on. I anticipated somebody would ask me this. I cannot comment upon the performance or results of any examination or test, and I cannot offer any opinion as to the guilt or innocence of a defendant or suspect.
Frank, how many people were interviewed yesterday in this investigation to get to the bottom of the bag? I heard.
Well, it was more than just witness interviews. It was also video, and it was also getting a lot of documentary evidence. But let's see. We interviewed Ioano. Same nurse, mom, Ioano. Who else?
Detectives
we talked to.
One
detective. Four people. Four people.
Were they all nurses? Or?
No. Nurse, detective, an attorney, and the complainant's mother.
And as a layperson, can you again explain to me, considering the spectacle this has created in the past 24 to 48 hours, how someone could not be charged with anything in regards to what is
sure.
clearly a hoax?
See these books over here? This is the New York State Penal Law. Okay? In order for me to prosecute somebody for an offense, it has to be codified as a crime in the New York State Penal Law. If that is not codified...
I'll come back to the podium. I'll make it easier.
If that is not codified as a crime in the New York State Penal Law, I can't prosecute it. There's a lot of stuff that should be crimes, but they're not crimes. If you lie under oath, that's a crime. All right? If you present to a court of law dummied up evidence, that's a crime. But I don't think, and again, I'm going to double check it, and the focus of this thing was me going into the allegations of witness tampering, so I haven't looked at every single statute in New York State. I haven't had a time yet. But my general impression is that if you go to an attorney and you lie to an attorney, you're not under oath, and you bamboozle an attorney, and you create this manufactured ruse, it's not a crime. But we'll look at it to make sure.
You pointed out you can't go into specifics about your case, Frank, but do you have a timeline on perhaps when a grand jury could see evidence?
The question in my mind is not when this case will go to a grand jury. The question in my mind is if this case will go to a grand jury.
You said that the bag with the plastic bag was traced back to Mr. Ioannou's office. Did that call into question at all any possible involvement from someone from his office, or what did you conclude from there?
There's nothing criminal in what Mr. Ioannou did.
Frank, as the elected district attorney, mm-hmm. this is a spectacle, people are saying. Bizarre, extraordinary. How have you, as the elected district attorney, allowed this to happen? It's spun out of control.
Are you kidding me? Seriously? Are you kidding me? This office is not responsible for this circus. I didn't call a press conference and do what Mr. Ioannou did. I have executed my professional obligations exactly according to what the Code of Professional Conduct says. I have not leaked any information. I have not talked about forensic testing. I have not done any of these things. This office and my staff has comported itself professionally throughout this entire matter. I cannot speak for others, nor am I going to be responsible for the conduct of others.
Do you have a problem ethically with the way Mr. Cambria is characterizing the evidence in this case? And is he being misleading in what he's saying?
Are you asking me if he's being misleading or unethical? You seem to be asking these two questions.
Well, let's start with misleading.
It's not for misleading. I'm not going to comment upon the accuracy of what he said to the media, nor should I comment upon whether his actions are ethical or unethical. I don't decide that in Erie County. The grievance committee does. My job is to prosecute cases and the prosecutor.
You started off saying, and we talked to you a lot about this, not wanting to comment on why you didn't want to comment. If you were Patrick Kane or the defendant in this investigation, would you feel defamed, your reputation tainted at this point?
I cannot speak for Mr. Kane. Again, I can't speak for him.
You said if.
If what?
If this is going to grand jury.
Okay, I just understand.
Can we deduce from that at this point in time, this is not slated to be presented for a grand jury at a specific time?
What you can deduce is the following. There will be one of two actions taken by this office, okay? This case will either be administratively closed, as other cases have been, or this case will be presented to an Erie County grand jury. I have the discretion as the district attorney of this county in making that determination. Those are the two options on the table. And when this investigation is completed to my satisfaction, when all the forensic testing is done, when all the follow-up interviews that now have to be done are done, then I will turn myself to making that decision after I consult with the prosecutor on the case, Rose Johnson, and after I consult with my investigators and the detectives at the Hamburg Police Department.
Frank,
But at this point, the case is not, you have not closed the case.
No.
It is still ongoing.
No, I haven't closed the investigation. No.
Do you believe this will happen? Do you believe this will happen before you finish your term as DA and become a judge?
First of all, I'm not going to get in an argument with you. Yeah, we'll make a decision by then. Absolutely.
Frank, if this was a deposition at the lawyer's office, would that make it a criminal offense? Or just because she talked to a lawyer, is that why there's no charges? Would a deposition?
Well, if she had lied under oath, that could be perjury, yeah. Lying under oath at a legal proceeding is generally considered to be perjury.
Frank, she interviewed Frank?
Yeah. Who?
The person who had...
Mom?
The mother.
Yeah.
The mother.
Yeah.
By your investigator?
Yeah.
Frank, was the...
She didn't give a sworn statement, though.
Was the complainant at any of the interviews that were conducted by your office?
The interviews as to the witness tampering, though?
Yes.
No.
Okay. I know you said ethical obligation as to talking about the DNA evidence handed over to the defense attorney of Patrick Kane. Should the public...
No, that's not what I said. I talked about my ethical... I'm sorry. Are you referring to my ethical obligations with divulging test results to the public or ethical obligations as revealing potentially exculpatory evidence to counsel?
Yeah.
The latter.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't understand.
But right now, obviously... Publicly, it's being very talked about, you know, multiple DNA samples in an accuser's genital area, however anyone's quoting it. Should the public have any knowledge of that at this point in time? I mean, are you frustrated however it got out that it got out? And it is out.
I can only speak to the conduct of the Erie County District Attorney's Office, myself, and the prosecutors and investigators who work for me. I am fully confident that we have complied with all of our ethical obligations, and I have some pretty high ethical standards for this office. I cannot comment as to what anonymous sources say, what leakers say, what reporters report. I can't comment as to conspiracy theorists, speculators, people that want to turn this thing into a three-ring circus. This office has been very deliberate not to turn this matter into a three-ring circus and to investigate it in a professional manner. There are reports out there, there are people leaking, there's articles all over the place. You turn on a talk show, don't listen for more than 10 minutes. I made the mistake of tuning into a radio talk show last night, and I couldn't believe some of the crazy speculative stuff that was out there. I can't control that. What I control is how this office performs its duties. And this office has not only complied with what the law requires, but has complied with what the ethical code requires, and we will continue to do so.
Frank, how would you distill, for the sake of clarity, how would you distill what happened yesterday and the day before with Iwanu dropping the client and the news conference being held at what Cambria said? How that has actually impacted the heart of the case, as opposed to this is maybe a sidebar to the case. How has this impacted the actual case if we were to turn back the clock 48 hours?
I'm not sure how to answer that at this moment. Let me try to think that through a second. First of all, I think the best question when I was watching that press conference was asked by Lou Michel, the Buffalo News. Can you believe I'm actually giving you a shout out, Lou? I mean, and he asked Mr. Iwanu, is it a bizarre hoax? Yes, it's a bizarre hoax. It's a bizarre hoax, and it's a dog and pony show. What I have to figure out, that's number one. Number two. The focus of the investigation, somebody I think referred to it in a published report as an investigation within an investigation. The focus of this investigation was to determine whether there was evidence tampering and determine whether anything interfered with the integrity of the physical and forensic evidence. That has been our sole focus within the last 48 hours. Now we've come to certain, we found out certain facts, we have found out certain conclusions, and I thought it was imperative that I, so to speak, break my vow of silence, come out of the monastery and tell you guys what was going on, because as I started these remarks, the issue here with this matter is the integrity of the criminal justice system and the public's confidence in the criminal justice system. I think I have put that to bed. Now, new questions certainly arise because of this. You make a good point. New questions arise. And now I have to figure out where we go from here. What do we do with this new information? Obviously, there has been an effort to create a hoax. Obviously, there's been an effort to manufacture a perception that forensic evidence cannot be trusted. I got to figure out who was in on that, why they would do that, and what it means vis-a-vis all the other evidence. And I will be doing that over the course, or we will be doing that over the course of the next few days.
A follow-up, if I may.
Sure.
You said earlier, and you added the emphasis to the word if. You said this isn't a question about when this goes to a grand jury, but if.
Right.
It was pretty ominous emphasis, I would say.
I didn't mean to be ominous.
Okay, well, were you then thinking the same way before this all happened about whether that this may not go to a grand jury at all, even before what happened over the last 48 hours?
I've been thinking about this case like I think of any other case, okay? When there's a non-arrest situation, when the agency has not made it, it works differently when the agency has made an arrest. It's a different set of procedural rules that are in play. But when we have a so-called direct case, this is called a direct case, the district attorney has two options in every one of these cases, either to present this matter to a grand jury or to administratively close this matter. And I have to weigh those options, and I'm going to weigh those options.
Right, can you clarify, did you or any police agencies actually interview the complainant's mother about what you call the hoax?
Yes.
And was she interviewed under oath?
No.
At the end of the day?
She was in the presence of an attorney. She gave an interview, but she wouldn't do it under oath. If the FBI was there, that would be a crime, but it does not state crime.
You said she denied it, correct?
She admitted certain things, and she denied certain things. She admitted, and I want to be accurate here, Joe, she admitted that she was at the hospital with her daughter. She admitted that the same nurse had discussed this bag with her, but then she denied that she actually ever took possession of the bag.
That's correct.
Okay. And obviously, because if she admitted that she took possession of the bag, then that's proof pretty sealed that she was the one that put the bag between the doors. Well, the bag was never between the doors.
Based on what you said, yeah. Could she be charged with lying to you if you couldn't prove otherwise?
She wasn't under oath. She was not under oath.
At the end of the day, the connecting tissue on the if, on the grand jury presentation, how much of that is this chapter in the investigation of whether or not the accuser knew about what her mother may or may not have done or said?
Oh, it will be a factor. But I have to determine that factually, Steve. I got to figure out what she knew or didn't know.
She wouldn't give a sworn statement, but did you ask her?
Okay. I don't know the pronouns that are... I got pronoun confusion. Who is the she and her that you're referring to?
The complainant's mother.
Okay.
She would not give a sworn statement, but did your investigators ask her to give a sworn statement?
We did not.
At the end of the day, it is known now, the world throughout, that the accuser's mother attempted to perpetrate an elaborate ruse in this case.
Mm-hmm.
How does that not affect a potential grand jury?
I think the nexus is, did the complainant herself participate and or know of this ruse? That's the important point, and that's what we have to investigate. Because as I said before, the child is usually not guilty of the sins perpetrated by the parent.
How will you find that out?
Yeah. We'll investigate it.
I mean, does that involve?
Well, come on, I'm not going to tell you that. I'm not going to let you know how we go about doing investigations and find out why don't I just like broadcast what we're going to do so I can give everybody a heads up so they can see it coming. I'm not going to comment on that.
The mother's actions were not criminal, at least at this point, but immoral. If she's watching this, do you have a message for her or copycats if they get an idea to do something like this?
Don't do it.
I mean, how much of an inconvenience has this been to you?
Well, I mean, I can't watch a football game anymore. I mean, it's nuts. I mean, I saw that. I'm sorry. You know, somebody told me today, Frank, don't try to be funny because you're not funny. See, he was wrong. I heard something. It's just so bizarre. I mean, I just saw that press conference that Tom did a couple days ago. Then we did the investigation. I spoke to Tom. And then I start getting all these texts and emails and tweets about 8:45, and then all of a sudden it's breaking into the football game, and it's like, so I really don't know how to answer it. I've never seen something like this before.
Next question.
Has the accuser retained new representation?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. One more question.
So investigations like this normally take this month, right?
Oh, there's no defined timetable for an investigation, Lou. This investigation took the investigation I'm directly addressing today took about 48 hours, maybe less. Some investigations take a week, some take a month, some take 3 months, some take 6 months, some take 2 years. I mean, we've prosecuted cases that are 30 years old. So, you know, it depends upon the case, it depends upon the evidence. It depends upon what more evidence needs to be collected, what evidence needs to be analyzed, how cooperative the witnesses are. I've never seen more lawyers representing witnesses than I've seen in this particular investigation. So it just, it's a case-by-case basis. You try to do it as promptly as you can, but you also want to be thorough and you want to be professional, because you want the confidence, the public to have confidence in the integrity of the system and the judgments that the district attorney makes. That's it.
Frank Tom said yesterday that he held his press conference, or 2 days ago, because he had concerns about the leaks and he wanted to say this publicly for accuracy purposes. Would you have preferred that he had not done that, gone straight to the DA, avoid the public spectacle? So
well, he had, and this is the last question, okay? This is the last question. Rose, I want to be accurate. Tom had called you the afternoon before the press conference?
Correct.
Okay. He had sent us a couple of text pictures of the these bags.
Photographs, yeah.
And that's when we started to commence, that he made his allegation to us, that's when we started to commence our investigation to see what was up here. But by the time he initially communicated that to us and the time he decided to call a press conference, he never called us back and said, you know, where are you guys with the investigation? How is this going forward? He just made a decision to call a press conference and drop the bomb, which kind of blew up in his face.
What do you do with
Thank
this
you.
Bag?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're done today. Okay? Thank you.